You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Neil Williams.
What's up?
Well, looks like I need to do some office cleaning. It's kind of...
Yeah, I decided to clean my desk right as we started the show.
So we got construction going on down the hallway here, folks, so you can hear some loud noise, and it's just unfortunate, but that's what we're doing. So, well, how are things going in your world, Neil?
Well, I didn't know it was going to rain today, but it's kind of nice.
It's raining.
So I'm enjoying the rain. Yeah. I don't have to be out on the road until later this evening, so it's been kind of nice to work from the office and not have to worry about it.
Right.
But they've got, do they have the machines inside the office today?
They got machines and people and nail guns and all kinds of stuff. So we had some water damage down the hall here, and we're going to pull the carpet out and replace half the wall. My other offices have three, and they're just cut in half. So with new wall for that reason. So I saw
the stickers on the wall, the post-it notes, when I was walking through the door the other day, and I knew that was a bad sign.
Yeah,
that's, so they got notes on there saying how much they're going to chop off,
and
how much they're going to cut out.
Yeah. So I'm trying to clean this.
Well, and honestly, for considering the situation, how many people are having repairs done, it's a good thing they were able to do it this soon. Because I know some other folks are having to wait quite a while. So that's one good thing about it.
So that's a good thing about it.
The silver lining.
Yeah. Except the things you cannot change. A lot of serenity prayer stuff going on right now.
Ha ha, yes.
So, yeah. Well, anyway, it's kind of a good segue into our topic for today, right?
Mm-hmm.
We discussed that we were going to talk about taking things personally. And taking things personally is a very common thing that I think a lot of us, virtually everybody, struggles with a little bit from time to time. But taking things personally can be a bad thing depending on your circumstances in the recovery process. Mm-hmm. And so I think what we'll first talk about is folks that are either sponsors or recovery coaches or therapists that take things too personally, and how that can undermine or delay your progress as a coach, but also even have some negative effect on your client in their recovery.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can very easily get off track when you take something personally. You make it something that it's not supposed to be.
That's right.
Did you have a scenario that you want to discuss first?
Well, sure. Okay. So back in the day, I worked in the federal prison system, and part of my job in my early career was literally a therapist on a drug unit or providing intensive drug abuse treatment services to federal inmates in federal prison. And, you know, that is such a great place to do therapy because everybody comes to their appointment.
Yeah.
They're pretty much on time. So anyway, That aside, I had poured my heart and soul, you know, into everybody I work with, even the guys that I kind of sort of that were a pain in the ass. But I poured my heart and soul into these guys. And I remember early on, one of the guys who I thought, and again, this is, you know, I'm 28 years old, 29 years old. So we got to factor that in there. Like that's partial insanity anyway. But so this guy that, you know, I remember this one guy in particular, man, I thought, oh man, you know, man, he's done some good work. You know, I had all these breakthroughs with him and man, he was ready to go. And honestly, you know, now I think about it, even now talking about it, I kind of felt like I had fixed him, even though, you know, it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
I didn't say that. I know it's very narcissistic, but remember, this is me 1,000 years ago. So, I was the change agent. Anyway, doesn't matter. I worked with this guy for several years, intensive stuff. He's ready to go. And lo and behold, he gets sent back to prison.
Not for how long?
Maybe it was inside of a year. It was less than a year from his release date. And I'm just like, you know, just flabbergasted, shocked. And it kind of took me on a tailspin, like, oh, my gosh, did I do everything I could have? Was there something else I could have done? And, you know, of course, I got with the guy and he's like, nah, man, I decided to use drugs again. I wasn't ready. I got out, you know, got into a sexual relationship and the lady was a stripper, whatever, you know what I mean? Usual stuff. And you can't hang out with those ladies and be in those clubs and not, you know,
ladies of the night.
No titty bars for Jesus. You know what I mean? So you know, he got jammed up, but man, until I came to my senses and talked to him, I was in my head, man, thinking that, you know, oh, well, that somehow his recovery was about me.
Yeah.
Now, come on. I mean, everybody that becomes a drug counselor or a coach, you know what I mean? We got in this because we're helpers.
Yeah.
But you have to have that level-headed approach. Like, I'm here to help. I just had a client literally before I was able to log into the show. And they're dealing with some family issues and concerns. What do I do? What do I do? Like, you know, you can only do what you can do. You know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And it's not my decision what your family does. It's their decision, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But back in the day, I'd be overarching, busting, you know, what can I do to solve this problem for this person, you know?
Yeah.
Now, I'm working hard. I'm older and wiser. Anyway, so taking things personal, I want you to echo in on this one. But there have been clients that I'd worked with that were either killed or committed suicide, you know, a good ways after. And God, man, even I'm kind of reminded you and I have this person that you work with that we know this individual, but that individual had been in various Oxford houses, rehab centers, jails, you know what I mean? Teen mm-hmm. challenges. And man, I would become Facebook friends with a lot of these guys that he knew. Man, half of them are dead, Neil. From overdoses. I mean, every one of them. Mm-hmm. So when somebody you work with takes their own life, that's painful, and that gives obviously a time of reflection regardless. So I'm sure maybe you've encountered that.
Yeah, and one of the things that I learned early on, and I think I understood it, or I thought I had an understanding of it, But when you're going to, if you're going to work in this kind of environment and you're going to do the kind of coaching that we do, and you're going to work with folks who are coming in, they're asking for you to help them. They come in with some pretty heavy baggage, and they come in with some real life issues. And it's real important that I remember that that doesn't go away just because I become a part of the situation.
Right.
And I think it was easy for me in the beginning because, you know, when you develop that connection with the person and you're building a relationship, it's easy to lose sight of all that very real stuff that is going on. It didn't go away just because y'all have a connection now and you forget about all the other stuff. It was almost like, well, I'm here now, you know, and here we can address this. Now we're doing the right things and we're taking the necessary steps. And so I kind of felt that. And with my first sponsee, it's the first person I ever sponsored, my sponsor, my working with people. And I was hesitant. I thought I was going to mess somebody up. And he was like, no, that's not the case. You know, you really need to do this. It's for your program. And so reluctantly, I wanted to. I just was hesitant. First sponsee. And things went well. I developed this connection with them. And then I didn't hear from them for a while. And that happens. That's normal. So I didn't think anything out of the ordinary. Well, find out that he did die. And the first, you know, the first person you ever try to work with, and you're essentially trying to lead them. And it was very difficult for me not to think that I did that, or not to think that I somehow played a role in that event. You know, what did I do? What did I say? Was I too hard on them? Did I not pay enough attention? Did I miss some red flags? Should I have called the police? Should I, you know, all these things start running through your head because now it's about me. What did I do? What didn't I do? When it did, the guy had been suffering for years. He had been in several treatment centers prior to me even meeting him. You know, he may have tried to take his own life before I ever met him. I don't know. But it was still a challenge for me not to take that personally and think maybe, and I even thought of the scenario in my mind came up. I of course created this in my own mind, but I thought, what if he met me and he was like, well, if this guy can't help me, then nobody can. And I don't, like, why would I even tell myself that? But it's, you know, you can fall into this trap. And again, narcissistic thinking, thinking that I have that kind of control, or that I'm the problem solver. And you and I, like you alluded to earlier, that's kind of our personality. We like to fix things. We like to find solutions. And it actually can be, it can actually be a negative personality trait if we're not careful, because you can take it too far. And especially when it's concerning relationships and stuff like that, you know, when someone's just simply not going to come around and be a part of that relationship, but you want to fix them. I'm going to fix them. So that was my experience. That was when I really had to understand that there's got to be a line, and you've got to understand that you're a tool in this bigger picture. And you're supposed to play your part and do your best. And it's not always going to work out the way you want it to.
Yeah, as coaches or helpers, you know, we're there to help people on their journey, help our clients on their journey to recovery or in recovery, not our journey, their journey. And they have to own that. They have to own their journey, own their recovery. We're here to help. We're here to assist, right? But, you know, we can only do so much. We do a lot sometimes. Being there, standing in the gap, it means everything sometimes, but especially chips down or stuff going on. But the other thing I do so I take notes on every session that I see, whether it's even the coaching sessions, I take notes, and I always put denies, suicidal ideation, intent, or plan on every note. Yeah. That applies. That's truthful. Why do I do that? Because it just means that I always am on the lookout for that. And then when it's not there, you document that at least it wasn't there during the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And that covers some degree of liability, the fact that you mentioned it in the notes and that you're looking for it. You know, you're monitoring. You're not looking for it, but you're always monitoring for it.
Mm-hmm. So, and there's also – oh, I'm sorry. Were you going further with that?
No.
I remember when I was doing my certification and the guy, the coach who was training, they took they penciled in 10-15 minute window to discuss what type of clients you're going to coach. And so they're walking you through and they're trying to get an idea of who everyone's target market is. And, you know, what kind of coaching are you going to do? Who are you going to serve? And I remember he stops and he goes, addicts and alcoholics. He said, do not coach these people. I do not reckon. I'm sitting there going, oh no, this is exactly what I'm going to do. And they specifically told all the people in there. And again, the folks I'm in this course with, I think there may have been one other who had some drinking habits in their past, but everybody else, they were not recovered alcoholics or addicts. And so they were like, yeah, I would never mess with those people. You know, they got some screws loose. And I'm sitting there like, well, yeah, we do. But I mean, I'm sitting right here in front of you, man. And so they even warn you that. So I say that because if you're going to do this, you better know what you're getting yourself into. And I always have the understanding of anything could happen. And no matter what does happen, I've got to make sure I'm doing things the right way for the right reasons and remembering that eventually I'm going to work with someone and something is going to happen. It's just, you know, it's the odds and statistics, and we're helping a lot of people. So it's going to happen, but I can't just concede to the fact that it's my fault or that I did that. But, you know, with my coaching right now, I coach some adolescents. And it's really easy for me to take it personal when they don't have an interest or they have a day where teenagers are teenagers, man.
Right.
We were a teenager once and we remember how it was. There are some days where, and speaking of, we'll do a hypothetical. He's sitting there and he just doesn't care. He just doesn't care. He's flipping his phone, you know, checking Instagram. And I'm talking to him about the gravity of the situation that we're in. It's not that we might be in, it's that we're in it. And I'm trying to communicate with him of what we can do. And he's just like, yeah, like, this is serious. But he doesn't care. You know, do I take that and run with it and think that I just suck as a coach? Or is he just being a teenager today? You know?
Yeah. I always follow that up with a process question. You know, hey, I notice as I'm talking, you're checking your phone. What's going on? Oh my God! The person next door just turned their. Okay, here we go. Paper thin walls. Unbelievable, man. We got construction on one end. It's like living in a dormitory or something. Anyway, I'd ask the process question. I know what's going on. Oh, nothing. I was just checking my phone. Or is everything okay? And just kind of start it from a therapeutic thing. And And then, you know, pretty soon they'll be paying attention because, you know, you don't want to waste your time. And somebody's paying for your time. So you want to make the most of it. So they keep on disengaging, or they think they can do this on their own or whatever. But it's interesting to see what's going through their head. Some kids are just doing it. That's why I have
fidget toys.
Yeah, man. Let me go. Here we go. Let me get a little sampling of this. Here we go. That's why we have.
Hey, I'm 35, and I have picked a couple of those up before.
Right.
Mindless.
I love that fad, man. The fidget spinner.
That one's pretty good. That one goes fast.
It is, man.
I still don't know how to. Honestly, it's weird that I have to say this, but I don't know how to use one of those spinners. Like I always hit.
You have 15 minutes to complain.
The old Rubik's Cube. Have the stickers been moved?
And this little fellow used to shoot out slime. You could buy the slime, it'd go. Pfft.
I don't know if that's beneficial thing.
This is GOAT. This is the Batman. It's from LA, Los Angeles, LA Talk Radio. But this is the Batman.
That's fancy.
Yes, sir.
Oh, that's pretty smooth.
Oh, right there. Okay, so.
Top of the line fidget spinners.
So, look, I mean, if you need to do a physically mediating response to talk, that's fine. And that kind of actually helps the client engage. They're not distracted. So some people use their phone in that similar fashion. It's just more odd, you know, a little bit more selfish when you're using the phone than a fidget spinner. So,
sometimes if I go into a session, you know, of course we're building off the session prior to it. And so I'll come into the next session with this plan and we're going to walk through some steps and we're going to do this. And then all of a sudden I get that demeanor and it's zero interest. And it's like, wow, this is not, we're not getting any traction. Those are the times where I will basically make them talk. Like I'm going to ask you, I'm going to do the whole gambit of coaching questions. What would it look like if walk me through this? Tell me how you got to the mood that you're in now. What is it the result of and how did you get here?
What did you want to talk about today?
Yeah, because clearly it's not what we planned on. And why did that change?
Yeah.
But again, I think it's much easier to stay on task if I don't make it about me. As soon as I make it about me, I forget the game plan, take it personally, and then I start thinking about stuff that doesn't even apply, like stuff that the client doesn't know about. Am I thinking about stuff from my life and bringing it into, you know, that the coaching mm-hmm. scenario? Do you ever have that issue?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sometimes, you know, that was the one good thing about being in prison or working in prison was that a lot of those folks' circumstances and experiences were so much different than mine that I could, when the door shut behind me, I'd never take any of that home, you know?
Yeah.
And you would think, oh, my God, you're in a prison. Didn't somebody get killed today? Yeah, but I don't identify with that. I mean, I do, but you know what I mean? Like, it's prison. That's not me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to go home and have some macaroni and cheese or whatever. So I think, you know, as part of our theme of taking it personally is having that boundary where we end and the other person or situation begins. So if we take a lot of stuff personally, that boundary is kind of porous, isn't it? You know, in a way. Because we're allowing whatever to affect us.
Right. When I still think there's a level of, I think where it gets weird is there is an investment, a personal investment,
yeah.
you know, that comes with coaching.
Right. I mean, You can empathize with somebody and put yourself in their shoes, but it may be dangerous to sympathize with somebody and pick up their cause.
Yeah, that's actually, can you elaborate on that?
Sure. You know, if it's like, oh, Neil, I can't believe that such and such did such and such to you. What a effing a-hole that person, you know what I mean? And I'm just going all this other stuff, and versus like, wow, man, I'm sorry that that person betrayed you, and man, you know, that certainly a tough situation, and I know that it hurts. Versus getting into the content of it too. Oh my God, what else did they do? What else did they say? And then I'm, you know, me and you are just like on the same level talking about this thing, which sometimes it's. Because you, once again, man, you can't solve the other person's problem, you know. And when you get into that sympathy, you're in a zone that it's the no win zone. So, it's funny, man. Yeah. People would. I worked in a women's prison for 6 years, and they would constantly try to get me. Oh, I'm here away from my kids and. You don't understand. I was sexually abused, and you're a man, or you're white. Here I am in this federal prison. And I would say, yeah, but I know you've been through some stuff, but what about the women who have been abused just as much, if not more than you, and yet they're still not in prison? What is it about them? Right? Where's their voice? You know what I mean? Think about it. Put some of your, but there's people like you that aren't doing what you're doing. I mean, same goes for all of us, right? So, it's really interesting, you know, that therapeutic boundary between empathy and sympathy. Well, if I'm a sympathizer, you've heard that word. Something sympathizers, man, they're taking up the cross. They're taking up their cause and almost being a martyr, willing to die for this other person's cause.
Right.
You've probably seen this. I'll tell you, you probably saw it either in the joint or you saw it in a center where, I'll make a scenario. Let's say, you see Pete and Nick get into some sort of a fight, and then you jump in the middle of it, you know, and you're gonna side with Nick, you know, and now all of a sudden you're sympathizing with Nick, and now you're part of it. Now you're in this problem, right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I just put some names up there for at random, but anyway.
Yeah, there has to be some neutrality because there's a level on right and wrong. And well,
you're no longer being a professional.
Right.
The way I look at it. I mean.
Well, yeah, you become a friend now.
Well, I got called to testify on a case today. Man, I want you to come and I want you to say that I'm low risk. I'm like, here's what I'm going to do. I'll do an affidavit that said that you passed all these tests and the research shows you're at low risk. And that's what the tests reveal. And I'm the one that administered these tests. And that's what I'll do for you. Because as an evaluator or as a professional, I need to stay somewhat neutral. Because you know what happens when they get you on the stand on the other side? Well, Mr. Cameron, what did you get paid for that? Whatever, $5,000. Whoa, that's an expensive evaluation. You know what I mean? So what they do is then they try to get you to saying you were a sympathizer or whatever, you're a liar for hire or whatever, you know? So, I mean, I see these like a glow in the dark condom, man. I can see it coming. Thank you very much.
This was a situation I was in. A client had legal issues and there was some discussion about me being involved. And you know, testifying on their behalf. And I said, now hang tight. I said, I want you to understand something about the court of law and me as a citizen and what's called as being sworn under oath. I said, what happens then is I don't get to lie. And so if they ask me about personal stuff about you that you've told me, what do I do then? And they're like, what do you mean? Like, well, I don't think you want me to tell the truth because the truth's going to hurt you. So we either leave me out of it or you understand that that's the situation. When you're in a court of law and you're under oath, you're going to answer the questions they ask you or else you're then committing a crime.
And also, as a CPC, you don't hold a license. You're certified. There's no doctor-client privilege between you and a coachee or a sponsee. It doesn't exist. But these people, oh, yeah, it exists because I'm there as his coach. No, it doesn't. What license? What under what body? My certification from the Life Coach Institute of XYZ? No, it doesn't. Like I said, good point, Neil.
Yeah, it's just you got to know where you stand. It's the same thing. You got to remember where you're at and what the situation is and what's your role. You know, play your role.
Stay in your lane.
Yeah.
And like I said, be supportive. You can be supportive. Doesn't mean you're sympathetic. You can be empathetic. Doesn't mean you're sympathetic. And I know this is outside coaching, but on this evaluation I performed, I just called it the way I saw it. And the science, or whatever, the scores, the numbers, et cetera, static, dynamic, risk factors, all that kind of lines up for this individual. So it's like, okay, that's where this individual sits. And it's a good thing. It's a good thing for this individual. You know what I mean? So that's why I like to get by with affidavits. Affidavits are the same thing as sworn court testimony, but you don't have to show up, and it does. And you have control over the narrative with an affidavit. You can literally type it, or that attorney can type it, and you can sign it and notarize it and hand it in to both attorneys. If it's admitted, then that's sworn testimony.
So you just basically get to make a statement on your own terms in the form of an affidavit. That's basically what it is.
Absolutely.
So what, in order to do that, for my education, anyone listening, what do you have to hold to write your own affidavit?
I mean, anybody could write an affidavit or a statement, right? You might want to get online and make one. Usually, though, I never make my own. And here's why. Because I know there's two attorneys in the room.
Yeah.
So one of those attorneys, I want one of those attorneys backing me, what I'm saying in the affidavit. At least one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So I'm going to partner with that attorney. Sometimes it's a prosecutor, man. I ain't going to lie, right? Most of the time now, it's defense. But back in a prior life, it was the prosecutor. But now, right. In this life, it's a defense. So I'm going to get with the defense attorney and say, look, what is it that you believe your client is, or guilty, innocent, why? Let's have a discussion about that. And the guy's like, okay, because you know what? My affidavit is only as good as that attorney that's going to sell it.
Yeah.
Or feel it or represent it. I mean, my words are my words. It's my statement. But that attorney's got to go in there in court and sell it to the prosecutor, a jury, or to a judge. And so it's exactly, yeah. I had a client that both you and I know. I didn't write up an affidavit, but I wrote up a statement talking about how good a particular treatment place was in the panhandle and how intensive it was. And that attorney, like, man, I love this. I'm going to run with it. And that attorney took my statement, and he went to court, and he talked about this program and how intensive it was. Man, that judge and that prosecutor's like, okay, let's send your client there. It sounds like a great community-based alternative.
And there he is.
There it is, and there he is to live another day, thank God.
Yeah.
out there. So, but that was a statement. That statement was sold. It was a correct statement, but you know what I mean? I mean, this, we're talking about courts of law and liability and stuff like that. So it's a little bit more strategy comes into this. But you know what? Sadly, that's how I think now, being an old and crusty guy, because I'm always thinking with one eye open, what if this turns south? Like you said, turning south with suicide. But I have to think about turning south with homicide, turning south with acting out sexually, turning south by person committing a criminal act. And again, that's not – look, folks, I'm not trying to – this is a Scared Straight episode, and it's turning into that real quick. That's only because of what my clientele are just a little bit riskier than the average there. So please take what I'm saying with a grain of salt. So,
yeah, and I mean, when you, especially when dealing with a court of law, you know, delivery is everything. So you can have, you know, John Doe killed a guy and Jake Doe killed a guy, different attorneys, same amount of evidence, you know, or whatever, you know, the perception of the individual is going to be a lot on how they deliver it. You know, how is it brought forward?
Absolutely.
And
oh my God,
that you can actually tie that into taking things personally. Say I go and behave like a real ass. I've been accused of something. I go in there and behave like a real, I didn't do it. Say I'm actually innocent, but the way I behave doesn't earn me any credits, you know? And then I say, oh, they just did that because of the color of my skin, or they just did that. They treated me this way because they don't like me. Well, you know, how did you handle it? You know, don't make it about you and, you know, excuse all the behavior and all the delivery and all the other things that came into play. You know, processes are set up for a reason. Things operate a certain way for a reason.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah, it's the truth is relative, you know, but I say this because, you know, with time and the way things are going. So let's say we both work in a sober living environment and to say, okay, well, this person, and we may have to be a witness to fact. So tell us about your program. Well, it's a sober living environment where the client ordinarily, or the guest ordinarily stays in the sober living environment for a period of 90 days. You guys rehab? We are not rehab. Well, so this here, there's this class. He took a Celebrate Recovery or an AA meeting or Smart Recovery or Life Skills, Relapse Prevention, Harm Reduction, Wellness. Isn't that rehab? No. It's a sober living environment that has didactic programming. That didactic programming might have therapeutic gains, but it's in no ways a full-on treatment center. And so we're going to probably have to, you know, as time moves forward, but folks, that if you operate a sober living home, you'll kind of understand where I'm coming from, where people make that into treatment. It's not treatment, but it is a therapeutic place. It has therapeutic design to it. So, and it's kind of, I don't know, it's just that boundary of things. I like to talk about that. I think that coaches, recovery coaches and sober coaches are going to be more involved in legal proceedings because people won't be able to go to rehab. People or might not afford outpatient counseling. So they're going to go with a coach. Well, that person gets in trouble, that's your client, you're going to go to court sooner or later. You know what I mean? You're going to get subpoenaed to show up and say something. So I know we started with taking things personally, but it's in those moments where those good boundaries that you held as a professional come in to save the day.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, something I'm thinking of is, as coaches, there are other coaches. And is it difficult for you, or was it difficult for you in the beginning when a client, I don't want to say fired, but say they went with another service, another coaching service.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Was it difficult for you not to take that person?
Oh, yeah.
Because it is for me. I don't care what anybody says. I'm not going to play around and act like it doesn't.
All right. All right.
And it does.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, sure. Again, let me rewind into my 20s. Absolutely. It hurt. It stung or whatever. But with time, I've developed kind of a style. And I've developed, I'm very clear on my first session with folks that I'm very aware that I may lose nearly 20% of my caseload because I'm not a good fit for you. and I understand that, you know what I mean? But let's continue to meet and see if that chemistry and that working relationship is there. If it's there, great. If it's not there, yeah, there's other people with other personalities. As a matter of fact, there's another guy down the road and everybody has nicknames. Like I think I'm South Pole and he's North Pole or something. You know what I mean? Yeah. They love me. The guys that fire me, go to him. They love him. Yeah. He's just a different guy, you know? So, I mean, he's a different way of relating to people. God knows, man, I'm not for everybody. And you know what I mean? It's just any relationship. Well, yeah.
And it's egotistical of me to think that everybody should like me. Yeah. Like, why? What about me is so cool or so good that everyone's going to like? It's not going to happen, man.
But you know what? I'm glad people get into this profession because they want to be liked. They want to be the savior. They had unmet attention needs. And sadly, they get those attention needs met by their clients. And, man, that gets them in trouble.
That's a really good point.
It's a great point. So, and again, being down the road 30 plus years in the industry, I can sit here and, but anyway, we're here to do a service. We're professionals. We go by policies and procedures and best practices that are dictated by the literature and the research community. And as long as we do things to people, I shouldn't say that, but we give people services that are in line with that, then we're going to be okay. We're going to be okay. So, but yeah, if I'm in this business to be liked, no. Yeah. Thank God I worked in prison, man.
Yeah.
I learned that real quick.
Oh, and you know, my philosophy is I think my clients will like me if they allow me to guide them and they take certain steps because then they will get to experience the results. And they will then appreciate the process. And maybe then they will appreciate my role in that process. But I really don't care. Of course I would prefer that they like me. But I prefer that they see the results. I prefer that they make the decision to improve themselves in their life. Because I'm going to sound like a jerk. I don't need new friends. You know, I just want to help. And again, goes back to playing my role.
All right.
I just want to play my part.
Yeah.
But
I'm here to help people go from point A to point B or point B to point C or point A to point C. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of different ways I can do that through information, asking the right questions, giving folks opportunities. Have you ever thought about this? Have you ever thought about that? Let me invite you to maybe try something different than you've already done so far that might yield a better result, you know, and to do it with, you know, kind of free from those 12-step, well, you get what you give, you know what insanity is, right? When you do the same thing again and again, expect different result. You know what normal is? It's on the washing machine between spin and blow dry. I mean, come on, you know what I mean? But I use other parenthetical language, you know, same ideas, same recovery concepts, just using a little bit different language and methodology to work with the individual. So I've worked with people that hated the steps. They had a 12-step program. And then I would start with cognitive behavioral therapy, and they liked it. And then I would dip into the spiritual realm a little bit, and they kind of liked that. And then I start, you know, we do kind of backhanded step 4, 8, 9 work, but I'd call it something else.
Just don't use the word inventory. Just anything but the word inventory.
And man, they're like, man, where'd you get this stuff? This is pretty cool. Well, actually, I borrowed it from the 12-step program, and I thought that that might be something that was relevant and germane right now in this stage in your recovery. Well, that's kind of cool. Well, yeah, they're pretty cool. You know, a lot of people get alienated from AA or NA, like a lot of people get alienated from church or, you know, formalized religion. You know what I mean? So but they're not alienated in our relationship.
Right. Because
I've built trust with you.
Right. Well, not only that, but as a coach, you're flexible to their needs, whereas a program expects you to adjust to it.
Yeah, boy. You better get to level 2 or we're not going to do your discharge.
Yeah.
You're only on step 2. What's wrong with you, man? Come on. Yeah. Power greater than yourself. Story of sanity. Come on.
One, if you go through the legal system, you know how I did, the corrections facility they sent me to, that program, you had a deadline for steps. And like I didn't know the steps at this time. So I had deadlines for my steps. Yeah, and when I got out and started working with my sponsor, he was like, "You had a deadline?" He was like, "This is an emotional and spiritual program. You can't just put a date on it." I was like, "Oh, well, I've been putting dates on it. So maybe I need to rethink this process."
But. Yeah. Give Caesar what's Caesar's.
Yeah.
Is my my jail line. But anyhow. Well, it looks like we're coming up close on to we got 2 minutes left.
I have one question for you.
2 minutes, Neil.
I want to ask you a question. What do you think? Is there a skill or practice or tactic a coach could use to avoid taking things too personal? Is there one thing, if you could pick anything, to give as a piece of advice to a new coach like myself to avoid putting themselves in a situation where they take things too personally?
Yeah. So this is kind of one of those serenity prayer type things, you know, the wisdom to know the difference between something you should take personally and something that you shouldn't. The wisdom to know the difference. Look, you're human, but you're in a professional role. And you're taking this stuff home with you, or you're really perturbed, or something's affecting you personally as a result of this role. Man, you got to take a look at that. You got to take a look at that. And it's weird, man. I get it. That's why I'm in recovery. That's why I'm a recovery coach, because I'm in recovery and I'm really passionate about my recovery and I want to spread that word to everybody else. I get it. But once you take money and you become a professional, you're now a professional, right?
Yeah.
That's the role you're in. When I was with the Justice Department, whenever they strapped a gun on me and I was on a plane, guess what I'm now? I'm a gunfighter. I'm not a therapist.
Yeah.
You strapped a 9mm to me and I'm transporting this mental health patient to Timbuktu. Well, I'm a gunfighter now.
Yeah.
Why? Because you gave me a gun to wear in a duty capacity. That's why. Wow, you're just – and so, no, I mean, so, right? So you got to think about, look, if I'm receiving money for a service, I'm a professional. Therefore, I really need to walk. Look, I can have empathy, but I can't take stuff personally.
Yeah.
and just be on guard for that. We're all human. I get it, man. I mean, stuff every now and again, somebody will send something through me and it'll pop me in the face, man. And I have to kind of like, whoa, you know, shake it off and process it. So we're all human for that. So just really think about that serenity prayer. What, you know, what is it that you have the wisdom to know the difference on being personal or not? And go from there. There's a lot of stuff going on out there.
And remember what uniform you're wearing.
Yeah. I mean, I look the same. It was just something underneath it or attached to
it. You know what I mean. It's just like when you're going to prison, you're going to wear that jacket.
That's right. That's right. So, well, look, we're out of time. Another fantastic show today here in the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Next week, we'll have another fantastic show for you for sure. Please see our Facebook page, The Concierge Coaches. And I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. And Neil, where can folks reach you and see our other social media touch points?
Instagram for the show is concierge_coaches. And you can find me at elevatedlifestyleacademy.com and Elevated Lifestyle Academy on Instagram and Facebook.
Perfect. So until then, we'll see everybody next week here on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Have a great and blessed week, everybody. Take care.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.